So we are on Ein Vav Amud Beis, going to begin the eighth Perek.
Ein Vav Amud Beis.
Ein Vav Amud Beis, yeah. So, Sophis, we talked about at the end of the last Perek, the idea that there's various shiurim that you have for a person carries out something on Shabbos. It has to be, the item itself has to be something that's worth saving, that for example, it's not also b'hana or disgusting or whatever, as we discussed, and there has to be a minimum shiur of it, which we said we had a couple of opinions on the subject. We had the Chachamim had said, that if you have a person who particularly sets aside a certain amount of it, a smaller amount than usual, then he would be chayav for carrying out less than that. So to re-summarize then, if a person puts away something, a smaller amount of a smaller quantity of something, then he's chayav for carrying that out on Shabbos, because for him, actually, he made it important to him. But other than that, we're saying that for most people, you have a minimum amount. We have Reb Shimon disagreeing with that, and you have a couple of different understandings of the Shonim, what exactly Reb Shimon's position is. And in our mission, actually, Rashi says something somewhat different than what he did before. Previously, Rashi had said that Reb Shimon would disagree about the concept that once you have an amount that's suitable for the average person, then it's considered suitable and chayav for everybody. We said Reb Shimon would disagree with that and say that, for example, for a rich person, you might need a larger amount, because still that small quantity might not be enough for a rich person. Over here in our Mishnah, Rashi actually says something else as well, which is that Reb Shimon would also say that even if a person puts aside less than that, even if a person puts aside less than that amount, then the Tanakhama would say that now whatever amount it is that he put aside would be chayav for. And Reb Shimon would say that it might be a smaller amount, but still not necessarily the tiny amount that he put in. So let's learn the Mishnah, and then we can explain that a little bit better. So the Mishnah is going to start off with various kinds of liquids that a person might carry, and how much for each one he's chayav. Hamotzi yayin, the Mishnah says, somebody takes out wine on Shabbos, and we mean raw wine that wasn't diluted. Remember, their wine in those days was very syrupy or very alcoholic or whatever it is, and they would dilute it with water, as we're going to say in the Gemara. So here we're talking about the person just takes out wine as it is, without dilution. The amount is kedem bezigas hakos, the amount to mix and make a full kos, which we'll see in the Gemara what that is exactly. A kos is supposed to be a revius, so we'll see what we mean by that. Cholav, a person carries out milk on Shabbos, the amount is kedei gmiya, the amount that a person would swallow at one time. It's less than a revius. Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion over here, exactly how much less and what the relationship of it is to the kegeres, which is actually very relevant as far as determining the shiurim of various things. Nowhere in the Gemara does it explicitly say, for example, what a gregeris is. We know, we've talked about in the previous Perek, that you have the concept of a gregeris, a dried fig, where most things involving food on Shabbos, most malachas involving food, a person is chayav only if it was a gregeris. You don't actually have a definition anywhere in the Gemara of what that is relative to other known measurements, because obviously in the times of the Gemara, they knew you'd pick up a dried fig, and that would be it. The Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion over here about the pros and cons of that, and also why it is that we say over here this amount rather than saying a kigra again. Okay. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Dvash, if a person carries honey, the amount is kedei litin ala kosis, the amount that you could put on a sore. What kind of sore? Rashi says two explanations. One is a sore on the back of a camel or a horse. They get saddle sores. So you smear some honey on them to make it feel better. Another, then Rashi brings from his Rebbeim that it means if a person has a sore or a wound on the back of their own hand or the back of their own foot, then they would put honey on it to soothe it. So that amount is the amount a person is chayev for carrying on Shabbos. Shemen, a person carries oil on Shabbos. The amount would be kedei losuch eva katan, enough to be able to smear on a small limb. And we'll see in the Gemara eventually what at the bottom of Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, what this eva katan is. Mayim, a person carries water. The amount is kedei losuch behemet akilar. The amount would be enough to be able to dissolve kilar in it. Kilar is a is an eye medicine, an eye ointment. So it's made, it comes dry, and then you mix it with some water in order to be able to apply it to the eye. So the amount of water that you would need to mix with that eye ointment and to be able to apply to the eye. We'll see later on. We'll get to later on the question. Are we talking about enough to mix enough water to mix ointment for one eye or for both eyes? Okay. Ushar kolamashkin b'reviyas, all other liquids. The amount is a revius. So you have, in general, the amount is a revius, because that's the minimum amount that's considered to have any significance that a person would bother saving. In the case of the five liquids that we mentioned in the Mishnah, they're smaller amounts because, as the Gemara is going to eventually say, with those you have the purposes that we mentioned in the Mishnah are common enough that the Chachamim established those as the amount. So for example, let's say when it comes to honey, let's say, so you have the two purposes. People eat it, but they also equally commonly use it to put on sores, and therefore, since that amount is a smaller amount, then that was the amount that was established. And we'll see eventually on Daf Ayin Ches, the Gemara will go through all five of them and explain for each one of them why it has a smaller share. All other juices or liquids or whatever, the amount would be revius. And all kinds of dirty water would also be a revius. Now, obviously, you don't drink dirty water. So, again, the Gemara will discuss over there what you would do with that and why a revius if it is significant. Rav Shimon Omer Kulan B'Revius. Rav Shimon says, no, all the liquids are revius. All the ones that we mentioned in our Mishnah, or at least Rashi mentions three of them, the wine, the milk, and the honey. Achronim discussed the question, does Rashi mean all five of them, or does he mean Dafka those three? Anyway, the point is that Rav Shimon says that at least with those, it's Dafka Revius, not the lesser amounts that we said in the Mishnah. And he continues, all of these shiurim are only regarding a person who puts them aside, meaning, in other words, so here's where Rashi says that Rav Shimon is arguing with the second point that we said in the Mishnah in the previous parak, when we said that if a person puts away a smaller amount of something, so he's chayav for even that smaller amount, even though it might be only a tiny bit. So Rav Shimon disagrees with that, says Rashi, and says that no. Let's say, for example, with the first thing in our Mishnah, wine today mezigas hakoyz, which the Gemara is going to say is a quarter of a revius. So the Tanakama would say, let's say, for example, you had a person put away an even smaller amount of wine than that, then he would be chayiv for carrying it on Shabbos. And Rav Shimon says, no, even for a person who hides it away, you're going to say the amount would be a quarter of a revius. For everybody else, it would be a full revius. But if you put away less than that, then even that person would not be chayiv for it, says Rav Shimon. So the Gemara starts off. Let's define that wine kedei mezigas hakoyz. Tana, we learn in a braisa. So what does it mean kedei mezigas hakoyz yofe? It means the amount that you need to mix in order to make a nice cup. And what is my koyz yofe? Koyz shabracha. What do we mean by nice cup? We mean the koyz shabracha because that it has a number of dinim that we learned about in brachas, about how you have to fill it up. You have to fill it up completely. You have to rinse it out. You put nice kalim around it or tamidim around it or whatever. We said over there, we learned over there in the Gemara 10 things that apply to the Kosher Bracha. Rashi lists six of them over here, and you actually have, okay, and then we learned from the Gemara over there that we're only required nowadays to do four of them, and the Shulchan Aruch discusses the exact details. Whatever, the point is, it's nicer, and it has to be nicer in the quality of the wine and the quality of what you put around it, more so than the average cup, more so than a regular cup that you drink. Therefore, it's called Kos Yop. You need enough wine that when you mix it with water, you will have the amount that's needed for a Kos Yop. And what is that? Amar of Nachman, Amar of Babur. Kos Shabrach, Kosarach Sheheba, Roiva Revius. You have to have in it a quarter of a Revius. So a Revius, you have, to put it in modern terms, you have different opinions. Rav Avraham Chaim Noah says, and this is the opinion that we follow, that a Revius is just over 3 ounces. 86 cubic centimeters, just over 3 ounces. So a quarter of a revius then would be about 3/4 of an ounce. So he's saying that you need about 3/4 of an ounce of regular of raw wine. Kadesh means again over yamid on revius, and that way when you dilute it with 3 parts of water, then you end up with a full revius of wine.
Could you repeat that?
You need a revius for kiddush and for kosher bracha and so forth. Now, what it is again, in those times, their wine was very thick or very alcoholic or whatever it is, and you'd have to dilute it in order to drink it. The usual dilution, as we're saying over here, is 1 part wine to 3 parts water. Although the Gemara is going to soon, the Abaya and the Gemara is going to question that soon, but we'll get to that. Anyway, but what we're saying so far is, therefore, so you need, in order to have a revius of wine, you need, in order to have a full revius that you're going to use for kiddush or kosher bracha or whatever, you need 1/4 of a revius of wine to start with, and then you dilute that with 3/4 of a revius of water, and you wind up with a revius of drinkable wine. So to put it in modern terms, since a revius is about 3 ounces, then it means you'd start off with 3/4 of an ounce of pure wine. You'd mix it with water, and you end up with 3 ounces of mixed wine and water, and that's what you'd make kiddush or kosher bracha or whatever on. Rashi on the next Amud brings an explanation from his Rebbeim that the revius we're talking about over here actually means a lug, because a lug itself is 1/4 of a calf, so in that sense it can be called revius. Rashi doesn't like that explanation, though, based on a Gemara in Nazir, from which the implication is that we're talking about a revius of a lug. So the amount is indeed a revius of a lug, and therefore what you need is you take 1/4 of that, and that would be the amount of wine that we're talking about in our Mishnah. That's so if a person carries out. So to put it in that terms, then a person were to carry out on Shabbos 3/4 of an ounce of that thick syrupy or whatever wine, then he would be chayav chatas for it. Less than that, not. Omar Rabba, afanan nami tanena. So Rabba says, actually, so Rav Nachman is saying his din as an independent statement, not connected with our Mishnah, but actually you can see it from our Mishnah as well. We said if a person carries out wine on Shabbos, he's chayav if it was the amount to mix and make a full cup. The Tony Alok de Mazigas Kos Yop. Again, we said in the Braita that means enough to mix a Kos Yop. The Kotoni Sefer, Ushav Kalamashkin Merevius. And now the end of our Mishnah says that most liquids, you need a Revius to be Chayav for Shabbos. So therefore, in other words, Rava says, combining together what the Mishnah and the Braita are saying, what you have is, in the case of wine also, given that, as the Gemara is going to point out later, you do sometimes use wine for medicinal purposes, and then you would use it less. Then you would use less of it, but it's not very common to do that. Most wine is drunk. Therefore, you go according to the shear of drinking. So therefore, wine should be like most other liquids and require a revius. Why is the Mishnah implying that you need less? Because, as Rav Nachman said, you need to mix 1 part wine to 3 parts water in order to get something drinkable. So we see from that, in other words, that that's why the Mishnah uses the expression kedei mezigas hakos to tell us precisely that point, that the amount for wine is far less than a revius because it needs to be the amount that you would dilute with water in order to make it drinkable. the Rava Matamei, which means that Rava is going according to his own Svara, the Omar Rava, Kochamra de la Doria Chad Swas Maya, Lav Chamrahu. Rava says that if wine is not diluted with three parts of water, then it's not considered wine, and you wouldn't make a brach on it. So therefore, it fits exactly with what Rav Nachman is saying. Now, if you start out with roiva revius, you start out with a quarter of a revius, which is, as we said, let's say 3/4 of an ounce, and then you dilute it with 3 parts of water, then you wind up with a full revius. You wind up with 3 ounces, and that's enough to be able to drink. That's enough. That's a revius. Like most liquids, that's considered enough to be significant and therefore to be chayav on carrying for Shabbos, and that is the amount that you would be able to use for kosher bracha or for kiddush or whatever. Amar Abaya, however, Abaya says, shtei tshuvos b'davar. I have two reputations to that. You can't learn what maybe what Rav Nachman is saying is correct, that you need to dilute the wine like that, but you can't derive that from our Mishnah. First of all, Chada the Tznan, number one, we have a Mishnah in Masech and Nida that talks about, you have a bit of different, you have, the Mishnah has said there that you have 5 colors of blood that are metame a woman. We said that other colors, for example, yellow or green or whatever, even if they come out of her, are not metame her. They're not considered blood in halacha. You have 4 shades of red plus a shade of black that are the one nowadays. Of course, we don't have nowadays, as we learned in the Gemara over there, we don't have the expertise to tell that level of detail, so we consider anything red or anything even reddish to be metame, but technically there are only 4 red colors. One of them, the Mishnah says, is the hamozug, is the color of diluted wine. And what kind of diluted wine? Shneicha, okay, ma'im ve'echad yayin, mina yayin ashirani, 2 parts of water and 1 part of wine from the wine of Sharon. Sharon is a region in Eretz Yisrael, the coastal area, basically from Haifa to Tel Aviv, let's say. So you see that the proper amount of mixing is 2 parts of water, not 3. So what are you telling me? The amount is, so what are you telling me? It's supposed to be 3 parts water. And also, Abaya says, what are you telling me? I mean, the water is not there in the cup together with the wine. The water is there in the pitcher. You haven't yet mixed it in the wine. So why should it be that because you can mix this wine with that amount of water and end up with a revius, then therefore you should be chayav for carrying out this small amount? The fact of the matter is you haven't yet mixed it. The water is back in the jug. You haven't carried that out on Shabbos. All you're carrying out is the small amount of wine. Why should you be chayav for it? So evidently then, therefore, so Rashi explains, so obviously, therefore, what it must mean, it's not the reason why the Mishnah is chayav you for that small amount of wine must not be because that's the amount that you would mix and end up with a revius. It must be just that wine is different than other liquids. That happens to be the shear of it. So in other words, Rashi is saying implicitly that Abaya is saying, fine, I can accept what Rav Nachman is saying, that the amount that you mix for a kosher bracha, you start out with roiva revius. But obviously, based on that Mishnah and Nida, you're not mixing it with 3 parts of wine, but rather with 2 parts of water. So you don't necessarily end up with a full revius. Nevertheless, that would be the amount for wine that's considered kosher, and that a person would be chayav for carrying on Shabbos. You actually have a bunch of different explanations that the Rishonim have over here about and Achronim also about what exactly is Abaya asking. Tosfos gets into a bit of a discussion about that. Does Abaya mean to argue on the premise that you don't, and say that maybe you don't need a revius of want, that you don't need a revius for kosher bracha at all? Or is Abaya agreeing with that, but saying that? So is Abaya saying that, or is he saying I accept that you need a revius for kosher bracha, but in that case the amount in our Mishnah would not be a quarter of a revius, like Rav Nachman is saying, it would be a third of a revius, because then when you mix it with 2 parts of water, you end up with a revius. Or Tosfos brings up another possibility. Maybe indeed, for kosher bracha, you don't need to dilute it with water at all. Maybe indeed, you need to have a full revius of raw wine without dilution at all. So there are a few different ways that Rishonim and Achronim understand what Abaye is asking. Anyway, the point is, though, Abaye is saying, certainly this that you're saying, Rava, that wine has to be diluted with three parts of water, and you're proving that from our Mishnah, at the very least, you can't prove it from the Mishnah. Because you have that other Mishnah in Nida that says that the amount is two parts of water, not three. And maybe even the Mishnah is not so you certainly can't prove from our Mishnah that the amount that our Mishnah means is a quarter of a revius, and maybe even the din itself is not even correct. Maybe you don't need a quarter of a revius of raw wine for kosher bracha. Maybe you need a little more than that, or maybe you need a lot more than that. Maybe you need a full revius or whatever. Amalei Rava, so Rava answers Abaya, I'll answer your question. You're asking from that case in Nida about the wine over there where you're diluting it with two parts of water. Okay, the difference is Yaina Shironi, Lachud, the Rafi. The difference is Yaina Shironi is different. It's weaker than normal wine, so therefore two parts of water is enough with it. But most wine, you need three parts of water. Inami, or another possibility, the reason why you're mixing it with two parts of water, Hasan Mishum Chazusa. Because after all, what's the purpose in that Mishnah in Nida? When you're mixing this wine with water, you're not doing it in order to drink it. You're doing it in order to tell the color. In other words, the point is that the Mishnah is telling us over there what color would be Dam Nida and what's not. When it comes to Dam Nida, then the amount is you mix it with only two parts of water. So it's redder than regular wine would be. Aval a time of Bari Tse, but to actually drink it, to have a good taste, you would need more water. So in other words, Robert's first explanation is that most wines need three parts water, and Yain Ashironi to drink needs only two parts, or Yain Ashironi also needs three parts water, but when it comes to Dam Nida, you're not mixing it the amount that you would drink it. You're mixing it the amount that's going to produce a certain color, because that color is Halacha L'Moshe Mishina, that that's one of the colors that makes Hotame. So no contradiction from that to our Mishnah about which Rava's saying, which I'm saying, you can see from our Mishnah what Rav Nachman said about a quarter of a revius of wine. As far as your second question, that you're asking, the water wasn't even mixed with the wine, so why should you be hired for carrying that small amount of wine? The reason is very simple. Because when it comes to carrying on Shabbos, you need something that has a chashivus, something that has a use that's useful enough. It's an amount of the thing that's useful enough to keep. In this case, it has chashivus because precisely that point. Because you can mix it with water that comes from the jug and have a revius of wine that you're going to use for kiddush or what have you. And therefore, the average person will keep that amount, will keep a regular revius of wine in order to use, in order to that they'll have it for the next time they need a kosher bracha. So therefore, the fact that right now it's diluted, Robert says, doesn't make a difference, because the fact is, you could dilute it. The same thing as some of the other things in our Mishnah, the same way. For example, we said, let's say, water, we said in the Mishnah, that a person is high and carries enough to be able to dissolve some eye ointment. You don't necessarily have the eye ointment there right now, but you keep that amount of water because you could use it for that amount. So the same thing here with the wine. Okay. So that's that then. So that's the amount. When our Mishnah says that a person carries wine on Shabbos, he's chayev kedei mezigas hakos, that's what it means, enough to be able to dilute with water to make a kosher bracha. Next. Tana, we learn in a brisa, yavish b'kazayis. What about, this is all we were talking about, liquid wine. What about if the wine congealed? Then the amount a person is chayev for carrying on Shabbos would be the kazayis divrei Rav Nosson. Rav Nosson says the amount would be a kazayis then. Now, not a kegrigeris, like we said, in general applies to food on Shabbos, but rather a kazayis. And the reason is because when you start out with a revius of wine, Then when you start out with a Revius of wine and it hardens and dries, then you end up with a Kazayis. Again, you wouldn't necessarily have that with all wines nowadays, which are much more liquidy, but in those times with those syrupy kind of wines, then you would have that. By the way, how does a Revius compare to a Kazayis? So you have actually two different opinions. You have actually two different opinions in Shulchan Aruch whether a Kazayis is a half a Kabeza or a third of a Kabeza. A Revius, meanwhile, is 1.5 Kabeza. So it means, in other words, if we say that a Kazayis is half of a Kabeza, then it means Revius is a Beza and a half. So then it would mean that a Kazayis would be 1/3 of a Revius. If you say that a Kazayis is 1/3 of a Kabeza, then it comes out to around 1/4 of a Revius. So the point is that when the wine dries and hardens, then it becomes 1/3 or 1/3 or 1/4 of its original size. Because all the water evaporates out of it. Give it up nothing. Rav Yosef said, you should know, Rav Nassim, Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, Amru Gavar Echad, Rav Nassim and Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda are both saying the same thing, which is that if you start out with a Revius of liquid and it dries, then you're going to wind up with a Kazayis of solid. Rav Nassim Hodamar, and we just said what Rav Nassim says, that you start out with a Revius of wine and it congeals and you wind up with Kazayis of, and you wind up with a Kazayis piece. But Rav Yosef of Yehuda, where do we see Rav Yosef of Yehuda says such a thing? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Actually, part of it is a Mishnah in Adius, but the part that we're interested in, the part about Rav Yosef of Yehuda, is in a Braisa, so therefore the Gemara just quotes the Braisa. Rav Yehuda Omer, Shisha Dvarim Mikola Des Shammai Umechurmer Gesillel. There are six cases where Des Shammai is Mekol and Gesillel is Machmer, unlike usual. Now, there are actually many such cases, but Rashi explains like this. You have the Masechta Adius lists, among other things, all the cases where the Shammai is Mekel and the Tilla is Machmir, because since those are unusual, the Chachamim didn't want us to forget them, so they collected them all together. So you have in Masechta Adius, you have a Perek over there that deals with all the ones where the Shammai is Mekel and the Tilla is Machmir, which everybody agrees to. And then in the next Perek, you have individual ones where individual Tanoim list different ones where they had the Kabbalah from their Rebbeim, that in addition, the Shammai and the Tilla argued on these things in the Shammai Lekula. So Rav Yehuda has such a list of six things. In other words, he's saying there's all the ones that were mentioned in the previous Perek, which I agree with, plus there's another six. And one of them is Dam Nevela, the blood of a Nevela, that Shammai Matarin of a Tilla Matamin. But Shammai says that it's Tohar, meaning that a person is not Tomei if he touches it. Rashi actually brings two explanations. One is that it doesn't even have the Tumah of Mashkin, that it's not even Mashal the Kabbal, that it's not even Mashal, that is, well, maybe whether it's not Mashal the Kabbal Tumah, or just that it can't become Tomei like liquids can. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation. It can become Tomei as a liquid. It just doesn't, it's not Matamei a person if he touches a Kazayis of it, the way he would become Tomei if he touched a Kazayis of the flesh of the Nevela. Anyway, the Shammai says that, or Basilo Matamin. Basilo says that the blood is Matamei. Again, either Tumas Mashkin or maybe even Tumas Basar. Amr Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, after Tumu Basilo, lo Tumu el Badam Shiesh Berevias. So now Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says, you should know, even Basilo, when they say Tomei, they're only saying when you start out with blood that's the Revius. Why Revius? However, Yachal Likrish from Amr al Kazayis. Because when it congeals, it'll end up being a Kazayis. Since the amount that a person is Tomei if he touches a Nevela is when he touches a Kazayis, so therefore, when it comes to blood, the Tilla is going to be Matamei him only if he touched the amount, which will end up as a Kazayis, namely when it's liquid at the Revius. So you see, therefore, Rav Yosef is saying that Rav Yosef of Yehuda is saying the same thing as Rav Nassim, that if you start out with a Revius of liquid, you're going to end up with a Kazayis of solid. Amar Abaya, but Abaya says, Zoma Loihi. Maybe not necessarily. Not necessarily did Rav Nassim and Rav Yosef of Yehuda agree with each other's din. Ad kam like Amar Rav Nassim hacha beboi Revius. You know why Rav Nassim over here says that you need a Revius. That in other words, that you have a Kazayis of dried wine, then you chayav for carrying it on Shabbos because it's started out as a Revius, Ela v'yayin dekolish, only with wine, which is thinner. Wine. It's even the syrupy wine that they had in those days is still thinner than blood. So that's the proportion. Ava v'dam desamich, but blood is much thicker. So maybe therefore you could end up with a kazayis of blood even if you started out with less than a Revius. So therefore kazayis loy boy Revius. So a kazayis does not necessarily have to come from a Revius. You could start out with less than a Revius of blood and still wind up with a kazayis sized piece. Rav Nachman would say, Inami, or the other way around, Ad kam l'ka'omer Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda Hosam, the kazayis sagi le Rav Yosef, ela b'dam b'samich, or vice versa, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda is talking about blood which is thick, av yayin b'kodesh, but wine which is thinner, havi yosef Rav Yosef, then you start out with more than Rav Yosef, v'chimatik, and therefore, even if a person, if you end up with a kazayis, it means that it came from it means it came from larger than a Revius, and larger than a Revius, there's certainly no reason to say that a person should be chayav on Shabbos only for more than a Revius of wine. There's no question a Revius would be the minimum, would be the maximum amount that a person there's no question that you can't say any more than a Revius would, that a Revius already would not be significant. It is v'chimatik pachas v'chazayis v'chayav. And you would then you would say that if a person were to carry out even less than a kazayis, he'd be chayav, because again, when you start with a Revius of wine, Revius of Yehuda might well say that you're going to end up with less than a kazayis piece, with less than a kazayis size piece. So not necessarily are Rav Nachman and Revius of Yehuda saying anything similar.
Okay.
Next, the Mishnah said cholok kedei gemiyah. We said milk, the amount a person is chayav for carrying on Shabbos, is the amount that a person could swallow at one time. So now the Gemara is going to talk about a matter of linguistics in it. We know that there's two letters in Lashon Kodesh, Aleph and Ayin, that sound very similar. In fact, we Ashkenazim pronounce them identical. Sfaradim pronounce them differently, which is how it's supposed to be. But you have, with this and with a number of other words the Gemara is going to mention, you have a suffix whether the word is supposed to be with an Aleph or with an Ayin. So Ibarilah, who today gmi or with an aleph, or today gmi or with an ayin? What's the proper form of the word, with an aleph or with an ayin? Amr of Nachli, you can prove from the pasuk. The pasuk when Eliezer meets Rivka by the well, he asks her, "Hagmiini nama nayin mekadech? Let me swallow, let me drink a little bit of water from your jug." And the word "hagmiini" there is spelled with an aleph. So you see, therefore, the word gmiya in our Mishnah should also, properly speaking, be with an aleph. Even though, of course, we have in front of us with an ayin, yeah.
Is this pshat the same, either way you read it?
Either way, the meaning would be the same.
Both being the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, because the question, what's the proper form of the word? Yeah. Similarly, Iboyabahu, similarly, the Chachamim had a similar question. Gar'inin or gar'inin? In the previous perek, we said in the last Mishnah of the previous perek, we said that a person is chayev for carrying the kegeres of food on Shabbos, but we said when you're figuring the kegeres, you exclude, among other things, the seeds or the pits of the food, and the word over there was gautinehen. So the question is, again, is the proper word gautinin with an aleph or gautinin with an ayin? Omer, Rav Barula, again, we can prove from a pasuk, because you have a pasuk, the nigra me'erkecha, last week's parasha. It will be deducted from his erech. So we see that the shortish gora, gimel resh ayin, means to deduct. And the same thing, the pits or the seeds are deducted from the food because you eat the fruit and you're missing that amount or that amount where the seeds are because you throw them away and you don't eat them. So you see that the proper word should be with an ayin. Similarly, Iboilahu, the Chachamim had a similar question. Oimemois, oimemois. You have when it comes to Yom Kippur, when it comes to Yom Kippur, we know that the Kohen Gadol takes coals from the Mizbeach and brings and takes a pan full of coals together with Tertus into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and then puts the Tertus on the coals over there. So the Gemara mentions Rashi brings it briefly over here from a Braita that. What he has, that since the pasuk says he has to take gachalei esh, So that means, and on the one hand, if it only said gachale, which means coals, then you could think he could take even oimamos, even coals that are about to go out, dim coals. And then, and if it only said eish, you would think he has to bring live fire. So instead, it means he has to bring hot coals. Anyway, the point is, the word over there is oimamos. So the question is, oimamos with an aleph, or oimamos with an ayin. What's the correct form of the word? And again, Amrav Yitzchak Dini, you have a pasuk in Yecheskel, Arozim loy amamuhu with an ayin began elikim. You have a nevuah over there where Yecheskel was talking about the great power that Asher once had, where they were like the tallest tree in the forest, and then they were destroyed. And he tells Paray of Mitzrayim, don't think you're any better. Anyway, the point is, the pasuk uses the expression, no cedars amamuhu would dim him or would hide him began elikim in Hashem's garden. So you see that the word amamuhu means to make something dim. It means to make something dim or hidden or whatever. So you see that the word for dim cold should be oimamos with an ayin. In many places in Siddur, it talks about the idea when we say ein melech b'loy am, a king requires a people. It means the people also am the lashon oimamos, because we're saying over here it's with an ayin. The people are very dim and on a very low level compared to the king, but nevertheless he needs them in order to be a king. Without them he's not a king, and therefore that's how it is, the relationship between Hashem and us, and so forth. Okay, another one, ibayavahu, another one of these aleph versus ayin words. In towards the end of Amasechta, in the next to last parak of Amasechta, we have a din over there that says that if a person dies on Shabbos, Rahman al-Islam, you're not allowed to close his eyes on Shabbos because he's Muktzah. So the expression in the Mishnah over there is the Ein Ma'amtin. So the question is, again, is the word Ma'amtin with an aleph or with an ayin? Again, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, where the pasuk is describing the qualities of a tzaddik. He closes his eyes that he shouldn't look at something bad. And the word oitzim over there is with an ayin. So you see over there that the word should be ma'amtin, ma'amit, and ma'asim are the same thing. Sometimes you have words in Lashon Kodesh where you flip around a couple of letters, like you have kevis and kesev, and they mean the same thing. So the same thing, ma'amtin of the Mishnah, is related to oitzim of the pasuk. So it's supposed to be with an ayin. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Baba Basra, what's an example of this oitzim einav mer oitzbarah? The Gemara gives the example. Let's say in those days when women did laundry, they would do it by the river because they didn't have washing machines or whatever. And when they're going into the river and doing the laundry over there, they would have to hitch up their dresses so you can see parts of their legs. So imagine you have a person who has to walk by there because that's the way the road goes there by the river. So he has no choice but to walk in that area. And still, he keeps his eyes closed or turns them another direction in order not to see them. That's what the pasuk means by va'oitzim einav mer oitzbarah. So even though he's in a situation where he's in a place where of necessity, it's unsneistic, but he makes the effort to still not be looking around and seeing what he shouldn't see.
Rabbi, forgetting about modern Hebrew, don't you think ma'amatz with an aleph is le'amet kiburim, it's to strengthen, forget about closing?
True, I guess, but I mean, the shodesh almost, you have it in Tanakh also, it's not just modern Hebrew, the shodesh aleph mem tzadik means to strengthen, that's true, but if we didn't have the pasuk from Yeshaya, sure, we could have said that, okay, when you're closing the eyes, it's like you're pressing the eyelids against each other, so maybe it could be related to the word for strengthening. I don't know. Okay. By the way, there's a Gemara in Eruvin that brings a couple more of these, but there, the Gemara says that either way would be correct. That you have, for example, a mission over there that says case of ma'abrin, and the question is it ma'abrin with an aleph or with an ayin? And there, the Gemara says that actually both of them are correct. But over here in our Gemara, we're talking about ones only where the one with aleph or the one with ayin is correct. Okay. We learn in a brisa. Let's talk about more about this matter of milk. Hamotzi cholov shal behema. If a person carries out on Shabbos milk from a behema, which is a normal kind of milk that people drink, then as we said in the Mishnah Kedei Gemiya, then it would be the amount a person is chayiv, it's the amount that he swallows at once. Which, by the way, Tosfos had mentioned over there that one possibility is that amount is the equivalent of maloy lugma, the amount that a person would put in one cheek, that would fill up one cheek, where therefore from a size it looks like both his cheeks are full. Anyway,
How would that compare to a revius that we of wine that you drink?
So it's less than a revius. In fact, we say, for example, when we have a kotz or bracha, which has to be a minimum of a revius, that you have to drink of it at least maloy lugmav, which therefore is less than a revius. Yes. What about cholav shel isha? What about if a person takes out mother's milk on Shabbos, which people don't drink, the loyven shel beisa, or egg white, or raw egg white? So both of those is a different amount. Could be lifted from the shifra shel kilo. Then the amount would be the amount that you would put in a solution of kilo. So again, the kilo we mentioned in the Mishnah is a potion, a medicine that they use for sore eyes. So it has to be dissolved in something. Sometimes they would dissolve it in water, the Mishnah says. Sometimes instead they would dissolve it with mother's milk or with egg white. So the amount that it would take to dissolve that. What about kilo? And if a person takes out kilo itself on Shabbos, could they lush your famai? Then the amount would be if you have enough to be able to dissolve in water and put it on both eyes. Rashi says over here that it would be the amount that it would take for two eyes. The Meiri says that one eye would be enough, because after all, you don't necessarily have a person has an eye infection or a sore eye or whatever. Not necessarily are both of them sore at one time. You might well want to apply kilo to only one eye at a time. So the Meiri wants to say that we're talking about over here only one eye, about only one eye. But Rashi over here says two, says both eyes. Okay. Boy Ravashi. So Ravashi says when we're saying over here about the amount of kilo would be the amount that you can dissolve and then apply to both eyes or to one eye, is that kadesh shifa? Are we talking about exactly as much as is needed to dissolve and put on the eyes? Or kadesh achiza v'shifa? Or do you also have to take into account the amount that you put on your fingers? You take it, you put after you've dissolved the killer with water or egg white or what have you, you take some of it with your finger and then you rub it on the eye. Now some of it sticks to your finger. Are we counting that amount or not? So if a person were to take out the amount that is exactly enough for the eye, he wouldn't be chayv chatas then because you can't make him bring a chatas for something. Similarly, dvash, we said if a person carries out honey, the next thing in the Mishnah we said was dvash, honey, could be litin ala kosis, would be enough, if there's enough of it to put on a wound. So we said either, as Rashi had said, either it means a sore on the back of a horse or a camel, or it means a sore on a person's hand or foot, and you put honey on it to soothe it. So tana, could be litin ala pi kosis. So Braita clarifies that it means to put it on the mouth of the kosis. So what does that mean, the mouth of the kosis? Boy Rabashi. Al kosis, does it mean apuma de kola kosis? Does it mean on the surface of the entire kosis? The entire surface of it is called pi kosis, and therefore the Braita is saying the same thing as a Mishnah and just saying it in a different way. Or Dilma al Moshe kama de kosis, or maybe it only means on the initial top part where it sticks out. A motion means the part that sticks out. La puki hudrona davoy, as opposed to the rest of the area around it that not. In other words, think of it. For example, let's say think of like when you have a boil or something, you often have, but you know there's a raised point in the middle, and then you have around it there's a red area which is infected. So Ravashi is asking, when we say P kosis, do we mean the entire red area, or do we mean just that top little area, which is where the main part of the infection is, basically? And again, the Gemara says take. Okay. Since we're mentioning the healing of a kosis, so the Gemara digresses a little bit with some agabda on the subject. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. Everything that Hashem created in the world, He didn't create anything useless. Everything in the world, there always has a purpose. And we're going to see examples of this. You actually have, this week's Pirkei Avos says the same thing. The last Mishnah of this week's Pirkei Avos, that everything that Hashem created in the world, He created for His honor and His glory. So here, our Gemara is going to give examples of things that don't seem to have a purpose, and yet we find that they have a use. Bara Shavu, Hashem created snails, Lakosis, and the purpose of it is that they're useful for healing Lakosis. So we just said in the Mishnah that you can use honey to heal it, but you can also use slime from a snail to heal it. In fact, I think Adayim Azeh, I think doctors still use it sometimes. Bara Zvuv, Hashem created the fly, Lutzira, and the purpose of it is that if a person is stung by a hornet, Then you crush a fly and put it over there, and it helps make it feel better. Yatosh, Hashem created mosquitoes, l'nachosh, for the purpose that if a person is bitten by a snake, then you crush a mosquito and put it on that, and it helps it feel better. Obviously, I guess we're not talking about a poisonous snake, this is just some regular snake. The nachosh, like a puppet. In turn, the snake itself was created to be able to heal chafafis. Rashi says chafafis is min shchin, is a type of boil. So again, you take a snake, or you crush up a snake or whatever, and you put it on that. And usmomis, and then Hashem created the smomis, Rashi translates as a spider. What's the purpose? La'akrav, if a person was bitten by a person was stung by a scorpion, then you crush a spider and put it on there. So we see that many of these things. Now, Marshall points out, what about, for example, so why did Hashem create the scorpion itself and the hornet itself? Okay, obviously Hashem created things in the world that are meant in order to cause people pain, in order that this way a person can thereby get the punishment that they need to get for something that they did wrong. It's the way of Hashem punishing them in this world. So the Gemara is not asking, for example, why Hashem created the scorpion or the hornet or whatever. The question is, once Hashem created them and a person can be stung by them, then Hashem created other things that can be used to heal them. So the Gemara says, Heichi Ovid, right? How do you do this refuah? One of these ones that we're mentioning over here. So you take one black one and one white one, the shalki lahu, and you cook them together, the shayfile, and you rub it on the area. So whichever it is, one or another of these things, that goes back, switches around a couple of the things that we had over here. He puts nochash lachafafis last, and then heich yavid, which seems to imply that he says that's what we're talking about, that particular refuah. How do you use a snake? The heel chafaf is you take a black snake and a white snake and cook them together, etc. The Ritzvah actually says that's talking about using a snail for a kosis, because after all, that's the reason why we mentioned this in the first place, is because we were mentioning kosis. So therefore, the Ritzvah says that's what the Gemara means. How do you heal? How do you use snails to heal a kosis? You take a black snail and a white snail and then cook them together and apply it to the area. Okay. Now another
Rabbi Ellis, when you said Shalom Baruch Hashem Baruch Devarlo Elevatala, it could be talking about not just the refuah for it, but the actual akrav that comes. In other words, everything's got a purpose.
Right. Well, that's the point. In other words, that's what Marshall is saying. That there's the Gemara is not even asking what's the purpose of the akrav, because obviously the purpose of the akrav is that if a person did something that deserves a punishment, then Hashem can send an akrav to sting them. The question is, for example, you have, let's say, the other ones that we mentioned, the snail, the mosquito, et cetera, are very small, weak animals. So you would look around, like, what are they even needed in the world for? What are they accomplishing? And the answer is, because Hashem did create those mazikim, which are meant to punish people who need them. And so then we're saying that, on the other hand, then Hashem created these small, weak creatures that the purpose of them is to help heal those. And in that connection, now the Gemara is going to mention another thing, where we have small creatures that frighten large ones. We learn in a brisa, chamisha emos hein emos cholosh ala gibber. There are five things in the world where you find where a small creature is able to scare a big, powerful creature. means, in other words, so first of all, some of the ones that we mentioned are ones that we mentioned in the previous list, but also, again, as Marshall is saying, it connects with that, that just like you realize that the snail was created, the snail, a little weak creature, was created with the purpose of healing a carcass, the same thing, these little weak creatures over here were created with the purpose of being able to scare the powerful animals, and it means also, therefore, a person should realize from that, that Hashem had that even if you're faced with some big powerful enemy or whatever, you should realize that Hashem is able to deal with them even with a small weak thing. So they are number one, Emas Masgia al Ali. Number one, the fear that the lion has for the Masgia. Rashi explains that Masgia is a small animal that has a very loud voice, a very loud roar. So when it makes a noise, the lion thinks that there's some powerful predator over there, and it runs away. Ben Yoyada has a different explanation. He brings that it's some kind of animal that has very sharp claws, and it jumps onto he gives a name for it in Arabic, but I wasn't quite clear what it is in English. Anyway, whatever it is, it has very sharp claws, and it grabs the horse, it jumps onto the lion's back, and claws its way into its brain, basically. So the lion is afraid of the Masgia, even though the Masgia is a much smaller and weaker animal. Number two, Emas Yato shall appeal, that an elephant is afraid of a mosquito because the mosquito gets into its trunk and then it can't get it away. Emas Mamas shall akrav. Number three, that the scorpion is afraid of the spider. Rashi explains the same thing. It goes into the scorpion's ear, and the scorpion can't get it out. Number four, Emas Snunes al Nesher. The eagle, or Nesher could also be a vulture, is afraid of the Snunes. The Snunes is a smaller kind of bird, a swift or something like that, which Rashi explains what it does is it gets in under the Nesher's wings, and then the Nesher can't spread its wings freely because this little bird is in the way. And number five, Emas Kilvis al Leviathan, the fear that the Leviathan has for a Kilvis, which is a little sheret, a little sheret that goes into the ear of the Leviathan and bothers it. So each of those, the small, the big thing is afraid of the small one. Amrav Yehuda Maikra, Amrav Yehuda Amrav Maikra, Hamavlig Shoyd al Oz. You have a passage that expresses that idea that says that the Hashem strengthens the weak one, the one who usually would be shuddered, the one who usually would be despoiled and then taken advantage of. Hashem strengthens them over the powerful one. So also the Iyun Yaakov and Ein Yaakov points out that also it's a mashal for the Jewish people, how we're able to survive our various enemies. And in fact, he points out the five things that we have over here correspond to the five chumashim. In each one of the five chumashim, you have an example where a weaker person or a weaker group was able to overcome a stronger one. In Bereshit, for example, you have Avram fighting against the four kings. In Shmos, you have that all the nations are afraid of the Jewish people after Mount Torah, and so forth. In each of the five chumashim, you have an example where a weak group or a weak person is able to overcome a stronger one. Okay. More on this topic of the nature of animals. The Gemara says, Rabbi Zera Ashtach for Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zera one time met Rabbi Yehuda. To have a koi apitcha de bechamua. He was standing by the doorway of the house of his father-in-law. The chagid to have a bicha daite. He saw, before we start with this, by the way, I wanted to mention something interesting. Chassam Sofer has a very short word about this Kol Ma Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo LeBara Dovrach HaLeBatala. He says like this, you consider the contrast, he says, between the attitude of the Bnei Torah versus the attitude of the people who don't think that Yiddishkeit is important. We say that Hashem created the world, HaKol B'Shvil Yisrael, Hashem created the world for the Jewish people, Hashem created the world for the sake of us to be able to learn Torah and do mitzvah and make a deal with Achronim, but we say the rest of the people in the world have a purpose also. As we learned earlier in the at the beginning of the Masechta, Hashem created them. We learned in Brachos also that Hashem created them, that they accompany Him so the world is full of people because they do useful things in the world. They invent the various things that we use to serve Hashem with, and so on and so forth. So therefore, so we recognize that Lo Bara Dagar Echad Lachalal. Hashem didn't create anybody useless. Whereas they take the view that they're the ones who work and invent and do this and that and whatever. They're the ones who accomplish useful things, and they think that the ones who are sitting and learning Torah are the useless ones, and they don't accomplish anything. So they're in effect saying that, as far as they're concerned, Hashem created useless people in the world. So that's the Gemara is stressing over here. Realize how mistaken those people are, because their philosophy of life would say that there are people, namely people who learn Torah constantly, who are useless in the world. And that's not right. Okay. Rav Zera Ashkach to Rav Yehuda, Dabba Koya Pitcha de Bechamor. Rav Zera one time saw Rav Yehuda was standing by the doorway of his father-in-law's house. He saw that Rabbi Yehuda was in a very good mood. And he was in such a good mood, he could ask him about anything in the world, and Rabbi Yehuda would answer him. So now Rabbi Zera took the opportunity, like this usually they're learning Torah and they're learning Nigla. So now he's going to ask them about different things in the nature of the animal kingdom. And also each of these things represents something the Pnimius and Yonim as well. So Rav Zera asked him, Amalei, my time at Easy Maskan Beresha, the Hodur Imrin. Why is it when you see sheep and goats going, the goats always walk in front and then the sheep walk behind them? It's the same way Hashem made it, that it happens now, the same as when Hashem first created the world. First there's darkness, then there's light. So besides the symbol meaning of it, that in fact when you see sheep and goats walking, you do in fact see them walking that way. First of all, in Chassidus, in a number of places, it talks about the idea that this Bereisha HaShoicha V'Hodr Nehoira is not only the way that Hashem created on the first day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, but B'chlal, the whole world, you have a Tzimtzum, and then you have a Tzpashus, you have Hashem with Metzamtzem, his light, in order to create the world. So you have this first the Choshech of Tzimtzum, and then you have the Ma'aseh Tzpashus, that's the creation of the world. But you have to have first that, you have to go through that stage of Choshech first. Marsha says that also he's asking him like this. Historically, in the time of the second Mishmikdash, what happened? First, you had the darkness of the Greeks ruled over Eretz Yisrael and ruled over the Jewish people. And in fact, you have a medrash that mentions that the Choshech al Pnei Tehorim refers to the Greeks. So why is it that you had to have, that's the answer. He's asking, why is it that the Greeks, who are also compared in the Nevuah of Daniel, the Greeks are compared to goats, why did they come ahead of the sheep, which are the Jewish people? Why is it that first the Greeks had a kingdom for such a long time over the Jewish people, and only then was there able to be a Jewish kingdom of the Hashmonaim? And Rabbi Yehuda answers in the same way as by Ma'aseh Bereishis, you had first darkness, the Choshech al Pnei Tehorim, referring to the Greeks, and then you had the light, which is the Hashmonaim, who brought us the light of Torah and the light of Hanukkah. So it is also, that's why it had to be that way, because that's how Hashem created the world, that you have Yisrona or Mitoch HaChoshech. Then he asked him, my time Hani Mikaskian Vahani Migalion, why is it, speaking of the sheep and goats, why is it that sheep, their backside is covered with a tail, and the goats not. The goats only have a very short tail, and it doesn't cover their backside. And Rabbi Yehuda answers, Hani de machasinin minayu, because the difference is, sheep, we cover ourselves with what comes from them. They produce wool, which we wear. Therefore, machasin, therefore they get to be covered. The Hani, the machasinin minayu, migalion, we're the ones that we don't cover ourselves from, so they don't get to be covered. So in other words, the idea is that so the idea is the Maharal says al derech like because Hashem made it that we wear wool, and therefore we use it to cover ourselves and to be sneeristic. So therefore Hashem gave the sheep itself a more sneeristic nature, that it keeps its tail down and keeps it covering its backside and its erva. So Maharsha explains the deeper significance of this question, is he's asking, why is it you have the expression in the Gemara in Yuma is that you have the people at the end of the first Beit Mikdash. We know from the Pesukim what their Averis were, and the Avodah Zarah Gila Arayis and Shlichus Zamin. We also know from the Pesukim how long their Golus lasted, that their Golus was foretold by the Nevi'im that it's going to last 70 years. So why is it by them it was like that, whereas by us, we don't know. So why is it by us it's hidden? We don't know. And so he's explaining, in other words, that because by the first Beit Mikdash, their Averis were revealed. They did their Averis openly, and therefore their test was also open and was openly revealed 70 years. Whereas when it comes to the second Beit Mikdash, their Averis was more in secret. It was, as we know, Sinas Chinam, which is not as obvious a thing, and therefore the test is also concealed. And we don't know when this Golos is going to be over. Then he asks him, "My time a gamla zuter gnufte, why is it that a camel has a short tail?" And Rabbi Yehuda answers, "Mishum de achol kisi, because a camel eats thorns, and if it had a long tail, then the thorns would get tangled in it." And then he asks him, "My time a torah aricha gnufte, why is it that a cow has a long tail?" And he answers, and Rabbi Yehuda answers, "Mishum the dayer ba'agni, because a cow lives in the swamps and in the meadows, and there are flies over there. Oh boy, like hakoshi baki, he needs to be able to swish away and get rid of the flies, so he needs a long tail for that purpose."
Is the Torah a cow or really a shore?
Well, sure, but it means that species in general, the whole species of cattle, they all have long tails. Okay, cow, bull, whatever, they all have long tails. So in other words, the chesed of Hashem to the animals, that he creates them in the way that suits their lifestyle, that Hashem, for example, doesn't give a camel a long tail where then it's going to have to deal with thorns stuck in it. And the Maharsha explains that also, continuing with this theme of that he's asking him about themes in Jewish history, he's asking, Bazal is compared to a camel. You have a medrash that says that the four animals that it says in Parshas Shmini and in Parshas Re'eh that have one simen tumah and one simen tara, that those represent the four Goliaths. So the camel there represents Bazal. So why is it that the camel has a short tail in the tail representing the downfall? Bazal had a very quick downfall. Belshazzar takes the caliph of the Mizmikdash, uses them at his party. That night, Belshazzar is killed and Malchus Bazal is over. Whereas the Jewish people, our punishment has been very drawn out. So why is that? Like a long tail. So why is that? And Rabbi Yehuda answers him, because the Bavel, they ate the thorns, which represents that they destroyed the tzaddikim among the Jewish people. There's a Gemara in Erevin that compares the tzaddikim to thorns. So because of that, Hashem punished them very, very quickly, as opposed to the Jewish people. Hashem punished them gradually over time because there are the flies. The flies represent the Yetzer Hara. Hashem doesn't want to give us a punishment for all our avodas at one time. So therefore, Hashem makes it like a long tail that switches away the flies. In other words, little by little, the avodas are dealt with and punished and disposed of. Then the next question Reb Zera asked Reb Yehuda, "My time of counting the kamsa rakicha, why is it that the horns, meaning the antennas of a kamsa, are soft? What is a kamsa?" Rashi has two explanations. One is it means a grasshopper. The other it means an ant. Whatever it is, its antennas are very soft. Why is that? So he says, Omalei. He says because the grasshopper or the ant, whatever, lives among the grasses, the ikasha, if the antennas were hard, nadia, they would move, they would get broken off, umishavra, and then the creature would go blind. And where do we see that the antenna, that not having antennas makes the creature blind? D'Amar Shmuel. Shmuel, in fact, said, Hai man deboyu delusme lekamza. If you want to blind a kamza, lishol fino lekamne. Take off its antennas, because its eyes are on the ends of its antennas. So therefore, Hashem did a chesed for the creature and made it have soft antennas, so they don't break off. Marsha explains that the kamza over here represents the Jewish people. That in Golos we have no power. Our power is in our mouth. Our power is our power of tefillah and of tefillah and learning Torah, which is like an ant or like a grasshopper whose whole power, its whole strength is what it's able to eat and with its mouth. We do have a keren. We do have a certain horn, meaning a certain degree of malchus, for example, the Reish Galusa or the Nasi. But nevertheless, that keren, that horn, those leaders of the Jewish people have to be soft and have to be yielding, because we live among the goyim, and if the leaders of the Jewish people act too high-handedly and act too proudly, then they're going to be knocked out, and the Jewish people are going to go blind without them. Chas v'shalom. And he asks him another question. My timer high timra the town of Gilta madli la'ila. Why is it that the lower eyelid of chicken goes up? Meaning most creatures you think of ourselves, our upper eyelid moves down to where the lower eyelid is. The lower eyelid doesn't really move much when you close your eyes. The upper eyelid comes down and closes the eye. Why is it with chickens it's the other way around, the lower eyelid goes up to cover the eye? And Rabbi Yehuda answers him, the Dairi Adafi, because chickens roost on high beams or things like that, the Iokitra, and if smoke were to get into their eyes, because like the smoke rises, misabra, then the chicken would go blind. So again, Hashem did a chesed to the chicken and made it that this way. When the smoke rises, it doesn't get into their eyes because the lower eyelid protects it. So Marsha refers this to the fact that when we're in Golos, that we daven with our eyes lifted up to Hashem. So we're saying that why is that? Because we're up on a high place, we're on a high beam, and we're in danger of falling. Chas v'shalom, we need to daven for extra rachmanos. So we need to do that. Otherwise, the smoke of Golos will get into our eyes and blind us. Chas v'shalom. Okay. Then he continues asking about the meaning of a number of words in Aramaic. We said before that everything in the world Hashem created with a purpose. Words, so the Maharal explains that the next piece of Gemara is going to say like this. Words are not just stand, they're made up, just stand randomly. Words also, a word has a meaning behind it. So we want to understand with various words, why those words are the way they are. Why was such a word used? Why was this particular word used for this particular for this particular thing? In particular, now it might be that we know that Lashon Kodesh is like that. Lashon Kodesh is a purpose-built language. Every word in Lashon Kodesh has significance and tells us about the nature of the thing itself. As Alfred Abbe explains in Tanya, the word, the name of something in Lashon Kodesh represents the letters with which Hashem created that thing. Other languages are not really like that as much, but Aramaic is almost like Lashon Kodesh in that regard, because Aramaic is also a language that has a certain degree of Kedusha. The Gemara is written in it, the Zohar is written in it, even parts of Tanakh are written in it. So now we're going to go through a bunch of words in Aramaic and see what the deeper significance of them is, why those things have those names. So number one, Dasha. Why is a door in Aramaic called Dasha? The reason is Derech Sham, it represents the words in Lashon Kodesh, the way there. Because you go into the house through the door. So again, even though it's words in Aramaic, even though the word Dasha is in Aramaic, but because Aramaic is closely related to Lashon Kodesh, so some of the words in Aramaic are actually abbreviations of words in Lashon Kodesh. Says Marsha. Dauga, why is a ladder in Aramaic is called Dauga? Because it stands for Derech Gag, the way to the roof. Next, Makulissa. Makulissa, Rashi says, means a dip, like a sauce that you dip food into. So why is it called that? Because Mosai Tichladah. people say, when is that going to be finished? Which means Rashi said two explanations. One is it's the longest lasting food in the house because everything else you eat quickly, but a container of dip, you could take a long time to go through. So like people say, when is that going to finish? In other words, like when that's gone, what else are we going to eat? There's nothing left. Or the other explanation Rashi says is it goes so slowly that people say, like, when is this jar already going to be empty? The Aruch Bun, the third explanation, that Maskulissa means a spindle that you use to spin thread. Spinning thread is a very long process. So like you start the job and you feel like the job is never, when is this job already going to end? So therefore the thing is called Maskulissa. Next, Besa, a house is called Besa, because it stands for Boi Be'esidba, come and sit in it. Biksa, a hut is called that. It stands for Be'asa, a narrow house. So that's what a hut is. It's a small, narrow house. Kufsa. A kufsa is called that because kois the sieve, it stands for turn it over and we'll sit on it. What is a kufsa? Rashi says a couple of explanations. One is that it means a mortar that you use to grind things. Another one is that it's a container, a measuring container for wheat. And a third explanation is it means a lump or a chunk of wood. So it's called that because all those things, kois betiv, you can flip it over and sit on it. Livni, why are bricks called livni? Because livnei bnei, they go for sons of sons. When you build a house of bricks, it's a strong house and it'll last for generations. a hedge or whatever made out of leaves
or branches like that is called that because chatzitza, because it's just a chatzitza, it's not an actual wall, it just serves to partition one place from another temporarily.
And the hay and the chest are interchangeable.
Yes, interchange, yeah, because hay and chest, we learned before in the parrot, we learned before in the previous parrot, hay and chest are similar in shape, the way Sardin pronounced them, they're pronounced very similar, yeah. Chatzva, why is a jug that you use to draw water from the river or whatever, why is it called chatzva? Shechotzev mayim min ha-nahar, because you use it to dig out water from the river. In other words, you use it to draw water. Chotev is like Kol Hashem Chotev Lavasesh. You dig out or you hew out, you carve out. So like here, so to speak, you're carving out water from the river. Kuza, why is a small kli cheres is called kuza? Because kazeh, it's like this. Like a person would say to somebody else, it's a small little thing. So like, do me a favor, fill up this little kazeh. This is like this with a little bit of wine or something. Shutisa. Why is a branch of hadas called shutisa? Because shtusa is related to the word shtus, because you dance around with it at a wedding or other times like that, and you act like a shoita. And the Maharshal refers to the famous Gemara in Ksubas, where it says that one of the Chachamim, Reb Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, used to do just that. By weddings, he would dance around in honor of the Chasan and Kala, with branches of Hadassim, and the other Chachamim criticized him for that, saying that it's beneath his dignity as a Talmud Chacham. But then we know, when the Gemara says over there, when he passed away, that a pillar of fire appeared by his Levaya, and they realized that Hanyulei Shutisi L'Saba, that is Shtus, that was Shtus Dikdusha, as it talks about in many places in Chiddush, that his Shtus Dikdusha helped him and gave him that great advantage. So we see that there's a relationship between Shutisa, a branch of Hadass, and Shtus. Next, Meshikla. Why is a large basin called Meshikla? Because it stands for Moshi Kula, wash everyone. Because everybody bathes in that basin one after the other. What about a small basin? It's called Mashkilta. And that stands for Mashiakalta. So it washes the Kala. Because only a Kala or other important women use such a basin. So the large one is used by everybody, so it's called Meshikla for Kola, whereas the second one is a small, beautiful basin, and it's used for specifically for important women like a Kala. Next, Osisa. Why is a mortar in Aramaic called Osisa? And he says because it's related to the word Chasirta, which means missing, because how do you make a mortar? You take a block of wood and you carve out a hollow in it, and that becomes your mortar. The Aruch gives a different explanation, a different girsa, not chasirta,
but rather chosidta, that the mortar is like a chosid. You're pounding on it, you're banging on it all the time, and it doesn't react. So therefore, it's like a chosid that's willing to absorb blows and insults and whatever without reacting. Next, the thing that you use to grind in a mortar is called a buchna, in English it's called a pestle. So why is it called buchna? Because it stands for boi va'akena, come and we're going to hit it. So that's what you do with the buchna. Levusha, why is a garment called the garment that a person wears above their other clothing? Choluk el yonashi says, or an outer garment. Why is it called levusha? Because it stands for loy busha, no embarrassment. Because it covers, you have your underwear and your lower clothes or whatever, maybe ripped or worn out or whatever, and like this, you wear a nice levush on top of it to avoid embarrassment. Glima, then you have, there's a glima, which is a coat that you wear that you wear above that. Why is it called that? Chinasaba, it's a golem, because the person looks like a golem in it. Because a glima is made without sleeves, it's just like a poncho, sort of, that covers the whole body, but the person looks like a golem, meaning a mass without any particular avarim. The Aruch brings that when a person is sitting wrapped up in a glima, he looks like a golem, he looks like a person who can't do anything useful. Then you have gursa, then you have a very fancy coat, which the Gemara mentions in other places was specifically something that Talmid Chachamim wore, because it stands for gali v'esiv, uncover it and sit down, because when you sit down, you hitch up the bottom, like when you wear a kapata, you hitch up the bottom of it a little bit in order that it doesn't get dirty or doesn't get dirty or worn out on the ground. So therefore, so it's called a gulsa, because you uncover it, you lift it up a little bit before you sit down. Puria, why is a bed called puria? Chaparit baravan alayah, because you do period b'rivya on a bed. Burzinka, a dry well, is called in Aramaic burzinka. So why? Because it stands for burzenaki, this bur, this pit, is clean, is clean and empty of water. And another one, sudra. Why is the sudra, the turban, that Talmid Chachamim wear on their head, why is it called sudra? And Rabbi Yehuda says, because it stands for Sod Hashem L'Yireyav. The secret of Hashem is for those who fear him. The sudra is something that's worn by the Talmid Chachamim who learn the secrets of the Torah. In particular, Marsha mentioned, in general, the clothing that a person wears represents his midos. The word midah, in fact, means clothing, like v'lava shakayin nichnasei bad. So therefore, and the highest midah is yira. And therefore, the sudah, which you wear higher than all your other clothing, represents yira, which is the same thing as when we wear a yarmulke. That yarmulke is yorei malka, that we fear the king, that we fear the king, we fear Hashem. So a sudah represents that same idea, represents yira shamayin. The last one he asked him, Apadna, why is a palace called Apadna? And Rabbi Yehuda tells him, because it stands for Apis Chadein, by this door. Because everybody comes to the door of the palace for various purposes. Some of them come because they need the king to judge them. Some of them come because the king has drafted them into his service. So whatever it is, everybody's coming to that door. Going back to the matter of the animals that we mentioned before, we mentioned the natures of various animals, Tanan Abanan, Shloisha calls Manshima skin and Moisif and Gura. There are three creatures that the older they get, the stronger they get. The Elohim, Dog, Benachash, V'chazir, they are a fish, a snake, and a pig. The older they get, the older they get. So the Maral says a verse on it, that the idea is most animals are like in between, they're in between in nature, and when you go away from the in between, then you get weaker and weaker. But these creatures in particular are they're like all the way to one extreme. They're all the way to one extreme. So therefore, the dog is the extreme in one way, the nachash in another way, and therefore, like each of them, when they get old, fine, they're at their extreme, but then they become stronger. Ben Yoyada talks about that each of them represents a different nation. The fish represent the Jewish people that were, as we know, the famous mashal about the fish in the water in Torah. The nachash, he says, represents represents the Muslims. The chazir represents the Christians, and all of those all of those, the older they get and the more they exist in the world, the stronger they get until Mashiach comes. Okay.
Rabbi.
Shkoyach, everyone. Yeah,
Rabbi. Well, I want to mention is that last week I was the suffix about the minion on Sunday, but our minion is 9:30. So if you want to keep the same time for Sunday or you want to change it to later hours, either way, it's fine with me because we have 9:30.